This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor in New England, going to Jeremy Zakas in New South Wales, looking to the north of Australia. This is a continent, I must remind myself all the time, a very large landmass. And sitting on top of it like wearing a hat is a huge weather system. Jeremy, a good day to you. This is unusual to me. I've never seen something this, but it's regular for you. It's monsoon season. Are there cyclones in those clouds? Good evening to you.
G'day, John. Yes, look, I can definitely report at this point that it looks like, as we speak, there are no cyclones in the clouds. Now, look, we'll go back 48 hours, where on Friday we were expecting to actually get not one, but two cyclones hitting the north end of Australia. One was going to hit on the West Australian side, and one was going to hit basically in the centre and to the Queensland side, so left and right of the map. But then what happened, John, was in the last 48 hours, both those cyclones, the weather system and the energy that was in them, actually joined across the top of Australia. And what we are now looking at, if you look at a map of Australia and look at the weather systems, is actually like a cap, like a hat across the entire continent of just pure rain band, pure monsoonal rains, which are now starting to come down to the continent. So, John, we do not have any cyclones, but we actually have something which I think is arguably more worse, is that we actually have sustained rain coming across the entire top end of Australia, probably for at least the next week, maybe longer.
We're moving into spring momentarily. You're moving into fall momentarily. Is this something that you would see usually in the fall season, big monsoons?
We do. And normally the monsoons come through in, I guess you could say, pockets. So what you'll tend to see is a monsoonal mass move from the western side of Australia, the northwestern side, sorry, across the top end to the east and then dissipate. And then another one will flow in. Another one will probably come in down to the south. And you'll tend to get days of rain followed by days of not dry, but at least lesser rain than you would. So we do see this around this time of year, but I think what's more startling about this one is the fact that it's everywhere at once. It's basically across the entire top end of Australia all at the same time. So you don't have it in segments as we used to. That's not to say we haven't seen this before, but it is a much rarer event. So something we're watching very closely because, of course, now we've got the problem of possible floods, especially in northern Queensland where there's a larger population centre, and whether or not it's actually going to come down here to New South Wales, because a lot of people forget that any monsoon at the top, the weather system typically curves around the east coast of Australia. Then down here in Sydney, we actually get it from the ocean. So we could potentially get some of these rains. And honestly, John, I've had a look at the 10-day forecast. I think we will. We're actually due to get quite a lot of rain in the next couple of weeks.
La Nina. El Nino we've dealt with for months and months and months. La Nina, they're projecting La Nina maybe. What do we know?
Well, at this point, John, not only are they projecting it now, it is actually now 80% according to the Weather Service. And I might say it's actually the US Weather Service models that have predicted that 80% Australia and most of the world will experience some form of La Nina. The problem for us, though, and the reason why it's so problematic for us, is that La Nina in Australia actually means really, really heavy rainfalls, really, really copious amounts of rain, which create flood waters and create a lot of problems, and also basically cool down our country enough that we tend not to get the driest summer afterwards, which is good for bushfires in some ways, but also is not good because it means the land gets soaked. So it soaks up so much water during the La Nina event in winter that we tend to get the summer floods. And the summer floods here in Australia can be the most devastating because on top of the La Nina event that we get through the winter, we also then get that monsoonal season, which we're experiencing now, but at the end of it, which will be next year, which means it just adds more water to our system. So we don't get a chance for the continent to dry. So our Weather Service, our Bureau of Meteorology has not yet confirmed it's 80% by their records, but they've also said that they're not disputing the fact that it's an 80% chance. So I guess that is the toe tap now, though, to say that we're expecting a lot of rain really soon.
Western Australia, I understand it's another world. I understand that they hold themselves back from you. But right now there is concern about weather-related distribution in Western Australia because of those rains, flood events. And this says only 30% of the roads are sealed. What does that mean?
That means that literally 30% of the roads have asphalt on them. So if you look at a map of Australia, you'll notice Western Australia takes up most of the left half. It's a very, very large state. It's our biggest state. The roads that go into Perth and go across the southern part of the state, they have asphalt. They're like your normal road that you'll drive on, trucks, cars, everything can work on them. But as you go north, especially into the thousands and thousands of mining communities where literally hundreds of thousands of people live in the desert, all of those roads are unsealed. They're actually just made of compacted gravel and compacted dirt, and they're used by road trains and used by large trucks, which move large amounts of goods and freight into those areas, basically foods and necessities, when they need to. However, the problem is with unsealed roads, as soon as you get a little bit of water, which can happen from time to time, they become impassable. And normally, John, on any given year, those roads would never see rain. Those roads would literally be dry as a bone, and there would be no problem. But because the weather systems have changed so much now, a lot of those, basically those unsealed roads, are now starting to see rain and lots of rain, which means they're being washed out. So you could almost expect to see that up to maybe 60 to 70% of the roads in Western Australia heading out to those communities are now going to be impassable, which means people aren't going to be able to get food. They won't be able to get diesel for the generators. And a lot of communities may, in fact, have to be abandoned, which has happened from time to time as well during severe weather events. And people will have to come back south to Perth, or they may just have to leave full stop. So this, while it's a freight issue right now, it's actually becoming a social issue too. There are communities being threatened by the fact that the roads aren't up to scratch.
Have you ever driven from Darwin to Perth or vice versa? That looks like a huge drive.
It is a huge drive, and because of that, I've only ever flown. Honestly, I've always wanted to, and we do have a train line that actually goes all the way from Adelaide up to Darwin and then Adelaide to Perth. And that's a great train trip, but honestly, I've only ever flown Darwin, Adelaide, normally Adelaide, Perth. So yeah, it's too far for me. But John, honestly, some of the truck drivers, some of the road train, the freight companies, they do move items from Darwin to Perth via that northern route, which is actually across those unsealed roads. So these are the guys that are actually going to be out of pocket and really unable to sustain their businesses.
I have a collection of photographs from the late 1880s into 1920, 1930 Australia. And I'm trying to discover the differences between Sydney and Brisbane and Victoria and Perth. And what I've noticed is that Perth resembles a frontier town like as in America for a lot longer than Eastern Australia. And they seem big, wide roads, unpaved, dirt roads, neatly done, but clearly a frontier feel. Do they have a lot of wood in Perth to build those? I'm just trying to figure out why their construction, it didn't really lag behind yours. It was as if they were proud of the fact that they looked more like a frontier town than a settled city.
I think you might be right there. In all honesty, Perth is exactly like the American West in many, many ways, not only because of distance from the main East Coast towns, but also, as you said there, they had that frontier feel, and it was all about gold fields. They were built on gold fields, very similar to, say, like San Francisco and the gold rushes in California, same in Perth. And I think that was part of it. Not only did they hold on to that frontier kind of mystique, they also delayed some of their, I guess, changes and modernization because of the fact that was Perth, and that's what the governments are like. And even today, and if you think back to COVID, I guess the frontier style that Perth put into their COVID policies, where they said, you know what, the eastern states can do what they do. We're Perth, we're tougher, we'll stay open or we'll stay closed for a little bit and go through it. They showed a real sort of frontier sort of style of policy and government, and they still do. But at the same time, too, you did hit on something that Perth lacks, and that was a lot of forestry. So while they did have some there, which helped them build the initial frontier town, after a while, that was pretty much decimated. And while there are some forests and some woodlands around Perth itself today, which can be used for production of wood, there isn't that much. They need to get it in by freight from the eastern states. They are very much an all about mining, all about ore and minerals sort of state, really. And you can see the size of it. That is a big state to not have a lot of good wood on it. But because most of it's desert too, there's really no other sources to grab building materials. And that I think in itself made it probably in some ways maybe a bit more closer to places like Las Vegas, where you've got a bit of a desert city. Mix that in with a little bit of frontiers of the Wild West, and that's the mix you tend to get with Perth.
Yes, and that gives them that Perthian attitude of we're different. Jeremy Zakas is in New South Wales, the civilized part of Australia. And we're going to something that is alarming I've jested about how the creatures in Australia are exotic and everyone will try to kill you. Well, we're going to meet one that really did try to kill, a snake catcher. Jeremy Zakas, New South Wales, the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor.